Good morning, this is Artificially Intelligent News for Sunday, August 30th, 2026. I'm Mark Ellison. This AI-created program is independently fact-checked against authoritative reporting and official records. Here is the calm, complete briefing as of early Sunday morning Eastern Time. The Trump administration says it has reached an agreement giving the United States majority control over more than 65 billion barrels of proven Venezuelan oil reserves. President Trump announced the arrangement Friday and described it as the biggest oil deal in history. The details matter here because the public still has few of them. The White House has provided limited documentation, and the reported agreement has not been released in full. Venezuela's acting president, Delcy Rodriguez, confirmed an agreement involving development of 17 oil fields with proven potential of 65 billion barrels. Her government has also stressed Venezuelan sovereignty over its oil. Proven reserves describe oil identified in the ground. They do not mean it can be exported immediately. Turning reserves into production generally depends on financing, equipment, infrastructure, and clear operating rights. The administration presents the deal as a way to expand American energy security and influence in the Western Hemisphere. Supporters will watch for investment, operating rights, and how any production would be handled. Critics and energy analysts will also be looking for the legal terms, the role of private companies, and whether the agreement can materially change supply in a market still affected by the war with Iran. Another major corporate case is moving toward a possible resolution. Meta has agreed to pay up to $17.1 billion to a coalition of states, subject to court approval, in a settlement over allegations involving the impact of Facebook and Instagram on young users. New York Attorney General Letitia James says the agreement would bring payment to the states and require reforms intended to protect children online. The underlying litigation accused Meta of designing products to keep young people engaged, misleading users about safety, and improperly collecting children's data. Those are allegations in the case, not criminal findings. Any court-approved reforms would matter alongside the payment, because the case concerns how the platforms are designed and used by younger people. The agreement would resolve civil claims without turning allegations into criminal findings. The proposed settlement is consequential both for its size and for what it may require from a company whose platforms reach enormous numbers of teenagers. Court approval is still required. The broader legal and policy debate over platform design, parental controls, privacy, and youth mental health is not settled by one agreement. But this is among the largest attempts so far by state governments to impose a nationwide cost and specific changes on a major social media company. In election law, a federal judge has again blocked the Trump administration from putting limits on mail voting into effect, at least for now. U.S. District Judge Indira Talwani issued the order Thursday, shortly before the first mail ballots are due to go out ahead of the November midterm elections. Her ruling pauses implementation for 2 weeks. It followed a recent Supreme Court decision that dealt with procedure and did not decide whether the president's executive order is legal on the merits. The administration has appealed the new ruling. The order seeks to restrict mail voting, while Democrats and voting rights groups argue that election rules of this kind are largely governed by states and Congress. The immediate practical point is straightforward. The legal fight continues, and the current block means the administration cannot implement the directive while this latest order remains in force. Ballot distribution is close, making the timing especially important. The appeal may revisit the temporary block, but no final ruling on legality has been issued. A separate federal ruling has addressed the government's treatment of non-citizen students who speak about Israel and the war in Gaza. Judge Noel Wise in San Jose ruled Friday for the Stanford Daily, the student newspaper that brought the case. The court found that the government had unconstitutionally silenced critics through a policy and pattern of immigration enforcement aimed at protected speech. The ruling does not say that immigration authorities lack power to enforce the law or act against unlawful conduct. The government has said it has been pursuing people who disrupted campuses, but Judge Wise concluded that people who are lawfully present in the country retain First Amendment protections and that the government's standard was too vague for students to know what speech could put them at risk. The distinction is central. The ruling protects speech while leaving enforcement of unlawful conduct available. The judge declined some requested injunctions, so this is not necessarily the last word. It is, however, an important constitutional ruling at a time when college speech, protest activity, and immigration enforcement remain closely connected in public debate. The Justice Department had not responded to the Associated Press request for comment by Saturday. The government also lost a significant technology case this week. A federal judge in California ruled that the Pentagon acted unlawfully when it designated artificial intelligence company Anthropic as a supply chain risk and moved to cut it off from government business. The dispute began after Anthropic objected to uses of its AI systems that it said could enable mass surveillance or fully autonomous weapons. The Defense Department maintained that the company's position created national security concerns. Judge Rita Lynn found that the government's action was illegal and baseless, concluding that it punished the company for protected criticism rather than a demonstrated supply chain threat. The designation could have serious consequences for a contractor seeking government business. Judge Lynn's decision concerns the basis for the designation, rather than settling every policy question around military uses of AI. The ruling blocks enforcement of the designation. Anthropic says it wants to keep working with the government on national security uses of AI. The administration is expected to challenge the decision. Beyond this individual company, the case tests how far the government may go when a technology supplier publicly disagrees with military policy while also seeking to work on federal contracts. Public health officials in Pennsylvania have confirmed two measles-associated deaths, the state's first such deaths in 35 years. The Pennsylvania Department of Health says the two people were unvaccinated. Measles is highly contagious, and the state notes that death is rare but can occur. The announcement has renewed a national argument over vaccination as the United States deals with its largest measles surge in more than three decades. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro said vaccination could have prevented the deaths. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. publicly questioned the framing of the cases, and the disagreement has become part of a larger political debate. What is not in dispute in the state's official notice is that health officials have classified both deaths as measles-associated. For families, the practical advice from public health agencies remains to check vaccination status with a clinician, follow local health guidance, and seek medical advice promptly after a possible exposure or symptoms. Measles can begin with fever, cough, runny nose, and red eyes before the characteristic rash appears. Out west, the federal government's new Colorado River Plan is bringing sharp reductions for Arizona, California, and Nevada. The Bureau of Reclamation says the three lower basin states must reduce deliveries by a combined 1.25 million acre feet in each of 2027 and 2028. Arizona's share is 760,000 acre feet, California's is 440,000, and Nevada's is 50,000. 1 acre foot is roughly enough water for 2 to 3 households for a year, though water needs vary widely. The Bureau says the new 2-year operating guidelines are meant to respond to prolonged drought and critically strained reservoirs. Those delivery reductions can affect cities, farms, and water managers differently under their local arrangements. The Colorado River system serves about 40 million people and large agricultural areas. The plan gives the lower basin a near-term framework, but it does not resolve the longer-term problem of lower river flows, competing water rights and demand across 7 states, tribes, and Mexico. Conditions can require larger cuts, and negotiations over a durable basin-wide solution are likely to remain difficult. Internationally, the war involving the United States, Israel, and Iran has now reached the 6-month mark with no clear end in sight. The Strait of Hormuz remains central to the conflict. Iran has used the waterway as leverage, and tanker traffic has been sharply reduced. Regional governments have continued to seek an off-ramp, while Washington and Tehran have offered conflicting accounts of diplomatic contacts and the conditions for reopening the strait. Hormuz is a major route for oil and other energy shipments, which helps explain the wider economic effects. The military and humanitarian consequences remain serious. The economic effects are uneven. Energy producers and some investors have benefited from elevated prices, while households and businesses have faced higher costs for fuel, shipping, and air travel. The International Air Transport Association expects jet fuel to average far above last year's level. President Trump had initially described the war as likely to end quickly. 6 months later, he says there is no fixed timetable. The immediate questions are whether any agreement can reduce the danger around Hormuz and whether a broader diplomatic process can halt a conflict whose costs now reach far beyond the region. A catastrophic flood disaster on the Nepal-China border has grown worse overnight. Nepal's disaster agency says 734 people have died in Nepal and 2,498 are missing after destructive flooding along the Bodakoshi River. Chinese authorities reported 16 deaths and 546 missing on their side of the border. The disaster began after a glacier collapse triggered powerful floods and mudflows through mountain communities and transport routes. Rescue teams have been working in difficult terrain, while Nepal has warned that water levels are rising again and urged people in affected districts to remain on high alert. In mountain terrain, damaged roads and unstable ground can slow searches and the delivery of relief supplies. The missing include local residents, workers, tourists, and pilgrims from multiple countries. Nepal says it has mobilized its available resources, while specialized help from neighboring India and China has been arranged. These numbers may change as rescuers reach isolated areas, identify victims, and assess the risk from water still impounded high in the mountains. Now to money. Because it is Sunday, the most recent completed U.S. trading session was Friday, August 28th. These are final closing figures, not futures or intraday prices. The Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped 9.45 points to close at 53,559.99. The S&P 500 fell 19.23 points, or 0.2%, to 7,711.76. The Nasdaq Composite lost 138.93 points, or 0.5%, and finished at 26,402.42. The modest stock declines came after Federal Reserve Chair Kevin Warsh delivered his closely watched Jackson Hole speech. Warsh said inflation remains above the Fed's 2% objective and warned that policymakers have work to do if they are not confident inflation is moving down clearly and quickly enough. He did not announce a rate increase or commit the Fed to one at its next meeting, but the message made clear that rate hikes remain possible if inflation fails to improve. Markets reacted with a mixed but restrained session, while bond investors adjusted expectations for the path of policy. The next major tests are incoming inflation and employment data before the Fed meets in mid-September. For households, the practical significance is that borrowing costs, mortgage rates, credit conditions, and the price outlook all remain tied to whether inflation keeps cooling. For investors, Friday's market figures were final closes before the long weekend begins, not a forecast for where stocks will open next week. In sports, Victor Hovland takes a one-shot lead into the final round of the Tour Championship at Eastlake in Atlanta. The PGA Tour leaderboard has Hovland at 15 under par through three rounds after a third round 65. That puts the FedEx Cup finale in position for a competitive Sunday. Hovland began the day tied with a crowded group and moved ahead while several top players stayed within reach. A one-shot lead at Eastlake is substantial enough to control one's own fate, but it is nowhere near a guarantee over 18 holes against this field. The Tour Championship decides the season-long FedEx Cup title, so Sunday offers both a tournament trophy and the sport's major end-of-season prize. The key will be whether Hovland can keep the controlled ball striking that produced his 64, 66, and 65 opening rounds, or whether the players just behind him create a late leaderboard swing. College football is back as well, with a lively opening weekend already producing a few clear signals before the full slate begins next week. Southern California, ranked 14th in the preseason Associated Press poll, opened with a 42-26 victory over San Jose State. The Trojans built a 35-3 lead before San Jose State scored late. Quarterback Jaden Maiava completed 25 of 29 passes for 286 yards and 2 touchdowns. Virginia made an early Atlantic Coast Conference statement by beating North Carolina State 34-8, and North Dakota State marked its first game as an FBS program with a 33-7 win over Jacksonville State. The preseason poll has Ohio State first and Oregon second, followed by Georgia, Notre Dame, and Texas. The next rankings will not arrive until after the opening full week of games, so Week 0 offers an early look rather than a national verdict. Still, it has begun a season in which the Big Ten is chasing a fourth straight college football playoff championship. A quick results roundup from Saturday. In college football, Southern California defeated San Jose State 42-26. Virginia beat North Carolina State 34-8. North Dakota State won its FBS debut 33-7 over Jacksonville State. In Major League Baseball, the Boston Red Sox took the first game of their doubleheader at Yankee Stadium, shutting out New York 6-0. Rookie left-hander Jake Bennett worked 6 scoreless innings and struck out 7. And the Detroit Tigers edged the Los Angeles Dodgers 2-1. Detroit scored the winning run in the bottom of the 9th after the Dodgers tied the game in the 6th. The result left the Dodgers at 81-55 and the Tigers at 63-72. Finally, in entertainment, Tom Cruise has announced that he will return as NASCAR driver Cole Trickle in a follow-up to Days of Thunder. Cruise made the announcement Saturday at Daytona International Speedway before NASCAR's regular season finale. Paramount Pictures has set the movie for June 2, 2028. Anne Hathaway will co-star as a team owner and engineer. Cruise is producing with Jerry Bruckheimer and Tommy Harper, and Jonathan Levine is set to direct a script by Will Staples. The original Days of Thunder arrived in 1990 and connected Cruise's character to the NASCAR world at Daytona. Announcing the new film at the Speedway gives the project an obvious link to the first movie and to the sport's current audience. It is still early in the production process, so plot details and filming plans remain limited. That is the briefing for this Sunday. The Venezuela oil agreement, court decisions on voting, student speech and Anthropic, the Colorado River cuts, a difficult inflation outlook, the Iran war, and the devastating Nepal flood disaster. Please follow Artificially Intelligent News and share this briefing with one person who would value a calm morning news summary. I'm Mark Ellison. Thanks for listening, and take care.